This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome to another sunny. The clouds have parted, the angels are singing, and Natalie is finishing off a bowl full of something and licking a spoon. It can only mean one thing. It's mid noon on Friday, and it's a Friday fan club. Five star Friday fan club. Friday five star fan club, and my name is Vic Felm. I'm joined in the studio by special guest presenter this week, Captain Nathaniel Metcalf. Are you not joining in at any point?
No, I was trying to work out where it was going.
Oh, I was just picking you up, mate.
Thank you.
That's right. Did you see I went to Dartmoor?
Well, you just went to Dorset.
Dorset, that's where I went to Dorset.
We just discussed you couldn't remember where you'd
I can't
been.
Remember. I knew it began with a D, and I do. Well, there's like Deptford in London.
Sure.
And where's the other one?
Deptford.
There's Deptford in London, and there's another one in London. There's another one. I always used to get Deptford.
And
It wasn't Dagenham, but I always do. I do my music producing down in Deptford, and when I go down, I say I do my music producing. I go down and sit with my producer.
A regular Quincy Jones.
I'm a sort of like a backseat Quincy Jones, where I don't know how any of the technology works, and I don't know what all of the knobs and levers do, but I certainly know what I like to hear.
And the dials go up and down, don't they? Their own volition.
I think there is something that does make the tiles move. But what's the, so where all the Natalie? Can you just look up all of the places in London that begin with a D, and then we'll go Dulwich. There you go,
Dulwich,
and Deptford. Those are the two.
You got Clapham and Clapton.
I don't get them confused though. Weird. I think it's because I used to live near Clapham, and I used to go to the gym in Clapton, so I've kind of like got a visual representation of what
you've got a system.
I do have a system. Oh, it's really funny. I went to fucking Wookie Hole.
Oh yeah.
When I did the Wales Festival a few weeks ago. Oh, you're listening to Fan Club. First rule of Fan Club:
tell your friends about Fan Club.
Second rule of Fan Club:
please,
for the love of God, just
for the love of Pete.
And also, if you've got some smack talk to give us, why not smack it up with a 5-star review up on... not that I'll be reading them or enjoying them. I just think it's kind of pathetic that people think that we care.
Yeah.
We care.
Just put it up there if you want. We won't see it.
We won't see it. Or if we do see it, it's only because our producer makes us look at it. But anyway, there's a Wookiee Hole, 5 stars. I'd give 5 stars to Wookiee
Hole.
Oh, yes. It's that fucking dinosaur. We went, took my parents.
I've never been to Wookiee Hole.
I said take my parents. They paid very much so. But,
so Wookiee Hole is like caves?
Thanks, Natalie, for my tea.
A series of caves? Massive caves?
There was a series of caves. It's great, but it was taken over by Jerry Cottle.
Oh, yeah. The circus man.
Of circus fame. So basically, it used to be a series of caves where there's kind of like a legend around it. I think the legend...
The witch, is it? The witch of Wookiee Hole.
I think the legend predates Jerry Cottle's involvement.
Right.
But there was some implication that he's really gone with it.
Sure, he's a circus barker. So that's what you do, isn't you? If that's his thing, he's got to have the patter to go.
Yeah, and I really love it all. I mean, we've talked 2 consecutive weeks about how much I love theme parks.
Wookiee Hole isn't a theme park.
They've made it into a theme park.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it was really like, it's like this historic set of caves where there's a fucking rock that looks like a... It doesn't look like a witch. They go, that's the witch. And I was trying to imagine this little witch. And then I realised they meant this huge rock is the witch. I was like, well, that's not. But it did make me think they would make a really good film. The Legend of Wookiee Hole. Probably wouldn't be allowed to say Wookiee, though, because of Big George. Mm. And
Wookiee's a weird spelling, though, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe it's a different spelling, but I think it would be a good... Anyway, I don't want to talk too much about it because I've got my feelers out for the rights. I would make it. I think it's really good. Had a very clear vision of how it could be done. So if anyone is listening from Hollywood and they want to make a movie about the Wells Witch of Wookiee Wall, then the cave is noted for the Witch of Wookiee Hole, a roughly human-shaped stalagmite, it's not, that legend says is a witch turned to stone by a monk from Glastonbury. So he was off his tits... probably fresh from seeing Coldplay or Cooler Shaker, and he turned a witch into a stalagmite. That's the local BS story that they're giving it. Fun morning out it was. They've got all these animatronic dinosaurs and stuff like that, and I was just sad. Yeah. And they've got like a life-size King Kong. Yes. And by life-size, I mean a life-size. It's the size of what King Kong would be.
Yeah.
Not like a normal gorilla.
Has the dimensions of King Kong changed over the years?
They've changed for the monster universe that they've set up with Godzilla.
It's massive, massive now, right?
It's really massive now, but that's because it had to fight Godzilla. It's going to fight Godzilla at some point.
Right.
But I think that the dimensions... So, like, originally it was like a really big gorilla. Mm. And then...
Can hold a woman in its hand.
Yeah, if a woman... A woman's shoulders to ankles go across his palm with her little feet poking out the bottom and her head poking out the top.
Sure.
Then you've got your dimensions. Mighty Joe Young is like...
Quite a small
gorilla in terms of that. Mm. The gorilla in Rampage just kept growing and growing.
Right.
And now the Kong of Kong Skull Island, he's huge because... He's part of the monster universe.
I heard, this might be one of those apocryphal stories, I'm sure it might not be true, but I heard once when they were translating the computer game Donkey Kong, that then they were trying to translate it, it was kind of coming from Japan or whatever it was called in Japan, and they were going, yeah, it's called this, and they're like, what is it? And they go, right, okay, Donkey Kong, and they write it down, and it's out for months. And I think at some point the Japanese people come over and see it and go, what's this? What's Donkey Kong? And he's like, Donkey Kong, that's what you asked to be called, didn't you? And he said, no, it's meant to be Monkey Kong. And he goes, well, that makes more sense.
Is that true?
That's what I've heard. It sounds like it might be like a false story, but that's the way I heard it, that it was just meant to be. And when you look at it, you go,
yeah,
Monkey Kong.
Why would it be Donkey Kong?
It's like, we can't call it King Kong, but maybe we could just like fiddle it a bit, call it Monkey Kong.
Monkey Kong. That's funny. That's weird, yeah. So what were we saying?
Sizes of fictional giant gorillas.
Sizes of fictional gorillas. While we're talking, being given genuine negative bad reviews in our eye line, and I'm finding it very distracting. just because I find it so laughable. That anyone would bother to write in and think that they could stop the wheels of Fan Club from turning. Yeah, bring on your worst
reviews.
You know
what I say? Do you know what I say, Nick?
What are you saying, Nick?
When we're getting bad reviews, it just makes you think, must be doing something right. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean, Nick?
Yes. Must be ruffling someone's feathers.
Absolutely.
With our opinions on, John Carpenter. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I think he's good as well. And I like his music, not just his films.
Don't give an F what you think.
Yes. Point it to the man.
Yes.
Point it to the man. These guys with your little worlds, your small worlds, telling us about
Telling us about my giant DVD and Blu-ray collection. Up yours.
Yeah. Oh, have I upset you? Yes. Something we've said on the echo. Deal with it, mate. Just deal with it.
You try and strike us down with your twos and threes, it'll only make us stronger and by that weaker, because we'll spend more time sitting on a sofa watching the same movies over and over again. Why? Because they're comforting. And it's a dark world out there, so much better to draw the curtains so that light doesn't reflect off your big screen. And and chill out with a nice
bottle. Except in Dorset, where you had no curtains, so you couldn't.
In Dorset, and they had no curtains. Anyway, my point is that we were in fucking Wooking Hole, and it's a great place to visit. Really loved it. We were in Wooking Hole, and I saw a couple that were with a baby, and there was the wife and the husband, I'm assuming, and they could have just been partners, they didn't have to be married, but there was a wife and a husband and a baby, and he was holding the baby, and the tour guide was talking us through it, and she said, "These are the stalactites and these are the stalagmites," and his face lit up and he turned around to his wife and he did the Harry Hill stalactites, stalagmites, and she looked at him like, "What?" "Put your hand down, you wanker." like she'd obviously never seen it.
Yeah.
And I think I might have been the only person in that crowd that knew the reference.
Did you give him a sort of a look, or did you?
He didn't
leave
see it. He just was absolutely like crushed. Yeah, and I just thought it was so.
Because he's done this thing, he's holding a baby and going, "I mean, she doesn't really understand me at all." Yeah. I've committed now.
He's looking at it going, "God, well, we're stuck together."
This is it now.
It was he was so excited about it. It turned out stalactites, stalagmites, and yeah, she just looked at him like, "What the fuck are you doing, you bloody Burke?" That was that. I went to Dorset.
So is Wookie Hole in Dorset?
No, Wookie Hole's in Wells. So I did the Wells Festival a few weeks ago, and then I had like a morning. Had a morning in Wells before a gig. So we went to, went to Wookie Hole. Why not? Went in Rome, get a plane over and visit Wookie Hole.
Yeah. That's recommend it.
Never mind. Doesn't matter where you are. Wookie Hole.
I'm into it. I quite like to go to Wookie Hole.
You should fucking do it, mate. Try and get on at the World Festival and then cancel your gig. But while you're there.
Maybe ticket sales might cancel my own gig. Yeah, playing right into my hands.
Absolutely. You should book a place in all the towns with all the best amusements. Oh, bloody hell, I'm going to do a gig in Alton. I'm going to do a gig in Thorpe. Are these actual places?
Don't know.
I'm going to go to going to do a gig in Chessington.
Chessington Zoo.
Going to do a gig in, I keep forgetting what it's called, Centre Parks. I'd love to go to Centre Parks. I've been thinking about it often recently.
It's a holiday, the weather can't spoil.
No, but your partner can. But your subsequent life choices leading up to that moment can definitely ruin it. What was I going to say? So, yeah, I went to Dorset. I'll tell you this, right? I went to Dorset. It was my girlfriend's birthday. Went to Dorset. And I can't remember why I started doing it. So we were staying in a little place beginning with C outside of Dorset. It wasn't... It couldn't be Chatham. But Charmouth? Oh, it wasn't that. It was like this... Maybe it was Charmouth. It was this really small place. It had two pubs, right? Had two pubs, and I was staying there, and we were staying there. We were staying in this bed and breakfast, and there was no curtains in this bed and breakfast. So it was like a room with a what they tend to do with bed and breakfasts is, with Airbnbs is they get a room and they convert it and they put like a platform up. And they make a mezzanine, and then you've got like a bed above. But it's sort of like they just split a room, like in half the room in half. So we were staying up there, but they didn't put any curtains in. And it's like, you go, come on, mate, it's an Airbnb.
Exactly.
But it's not an Airbnb and C, is it? So there was a loophole. and there was also no breakfast. So I was like, well, this is just an Airbnb. You know, I'm going to complain about it and say, it says Airbnb, but we didn't get any breakfast. And he's like, yeah, but 2 out of 3 ain't bad. And I was like, what do you mean? You get air and bed. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. So you're not actually. Okay, fine, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. So we were in this Airbnb, really not having any curtains. I think that curtains are a minimum. When you know, you can't provide a bed and then no.
Sure, I would escape. I think it's. I think that's hellish. People don't want to get up early, do they? They're on holiday.
I was gently awoken by the dawn, but it's not really what you want. I'm knackered. My eye's been twitching all week.
Was there much else in this village apart from the pubs?
There was a fossil museum.
Oh, nice.
And then there was Lyme Regis that was just a short 7 or 8 minute cab ride away. But in order to book a cab, you'd have to phone it up like an hour in advance, and then it would take 20. So we booked a ta- right. Okay, so I'll tell you this: I started talking in a Scouse accent, right, in the day.
Why?
Why? I don't know. I mean, it's just. But I got stuck in it, right? So I was going, "All right, how's it going? Not so bad. I got me." Oh, because I know. Because every time I put my sunglasses on, I go, "I got me sunnies on. I got me shorts on. I'm having a laugh. I'm having a great time. Don't you worry." And so I started walking around and I started talking like this, right? And then we came up with a name for him. So my name's Jerry. And then I realised that Jerry is actually more outgoing than Nick, right? And I was actually going up to these strangers that we would meet on the street and I would just like say, "How's it going? You're all right." "Yeah, that's right. Walking your dog, I see. Nice, lovely day. The weather's all right, isn't it?" And I realised that I was actually a much nicer person when I wasn't being me. Not nicer, but more outgoing, right? And I thought, that's all right, actually. I don't mind, right? I don't mind this at all, right? So I'd be walking around and there'd be like someone in the street and I'd be like saying, "All right, you know which pub is the best?" and stuff like that. And they'd like direct us. So I went into this pub and it was my turn at the bar and I was full of absolute cocksure pride, right? I went right up to the bar and I said, "Do you know what? It's my girlfriend's birthday and I think I would like a bloody great pint of cider and she would like a gin and tonic, please." So I got my gin and tonic and my cider and I said, "Oh, what crisps have you got?" And they went through all the crisps that they had. And I was just like, "Well, I'll have a packet of that and a packet of that," right? And so we went over, we had a nice game of shithead, and we just, it was her birthday. She was fucking loving every second of it. And Jerry was enjoying it too. And by Jerry, I mean me. And Nick wasn't getting a fucking look in, right? So we're having a lovely old time. Then I had to...
What did your girlfriend make of Jerry?
She loved him.
More than Nick?
She loved him more than Nick. That's the thing. She's just like, "Does Nick have to come back?" And I said, "Not if you don't want it, babe. I'm loving this new life that I've got." You know, I was... But you know what? I was genuinely outgoing, right? I was genuinely just enjoying myself, right? And... and it was great. It was great. It wasn't just an holiday from home. It was an holiday from me, right? And it was, I just fucking loved it. Anyway, so we had to get a taxi over to Lyme Regis. I still can't remember if it's Lyme Regis or Lyme Regis.
I think it's Lyme, isn't it?
I think it's Lyme, but it's spelled with a Y, I think. Lyme. That's the way, that's the rule of thumb. It's that if it's a place, it's with a Y. And if it's a fruit... with an eye. That's how I remember it anyway. So
if it's a place, it's with a Y, and if it's a fruit, it's with an eye. We remember that from school, don't we?
I remember that from school, from the school days, with my little shorts on and my knees, my greased knees, hanging out the bottom of my shorts, running home to Mam. "It's bread on! It's bread on!" And we'd watch Bread, followed up by the Liverbirds. It was a great Thursday night lineup, actually. So there we were. And we're in this pub, and we'd had a couple of rounds by this point, had a couple of jars. Jerry was going nowhere, right? So I had my sunnies on, I was enjoying it, I talked to the locals, talked to the bar staff, great, right? So then we ordered a taxi. Now, the taxi firm is just one man that runs the taxi. So I phoned him up and it didn't bode well because I said, hello, I'd like to book a taxi now from this pub that we're in to go to Lyme Regis. And he said, okay, well, if the time is now, and I thought, that does not bode well. He goes, if the time is now 2:45, I will be with you at 8:30. It was like 45 minutes. All right, top banana. We'll order another couple of jars, get them down us, then we'll go into town. So he ordered another couple of drinks, talked to some more locals, and then the taxi arrived, got in the taxi. It was the same guy on the phone, right? So he'd left the pub. But I couldn't get rid of the accent because I talked to the guy on the phone in this accent. And he was the guy who was driving the cab. So I had to talk to him in this accent for a good, like, 15 minutes in this car journey, asking all sorts of info about how he's up, what he's up to, how he's doing, all of this stuff. Anyway, so he eventually dropped us off in Lyme Regis. And I was able to finally, over about 4 hours, shake the accent until we had to get back home again in the evening, and you know, we'd had like a day out. Anyway, phoned up and it was the same guy. So the accent comes back on, a little bit drunk. I was dropping the accent a little bit on the way home, right? Got home, right? I think nothing of it, right? Wake up the next day, have a nice time. Go to the seaside, have a look, you know, we're all right. And we think, right, well, there's two pubs in town, so we'll go to the other pub today, right? See what they've got on, see what sort of a spread they put on, right? No one's missing Jerry at this stage. Nick's all right, Nick's in control. We get to the pub, and it's about 2:45, and we get to the other pub. There's only two pubs in town, and the other pub closed at 2:30. So it's open on a Sunday between 12 and 2:30. So we had to go back to the original pub, full of the locals, full of the same staff, and I had to make a decision there whether I admit to my fraudulent behaviour the day before, or I slip back into talking in the accent.
And what did you do?
Well, I did a little bit of both, to be fair. When people were in earshot, I would sort of slip into Jerry, if you pardon the pun. But most of the time, I would send her to the bar because it wasn't her birthday on the Sunday. And she did. She's not a fucking princess now. So it was fucking awkward. But I did like the idea that you're in this small town. You create an alter ego for like a bit of a laugh for half an hour. And he ends up coming on the whole fucking holiday with you. I thought that was fun. Anyway, it's a difficult accent to drop. So you are now listening to Fan Club with me, Jerry No Surname, and Nathaniel Metcalf. That is Jezzes and Naz.
I really like the idea that they just knew.
Of course they knew! I'm not that good at an accent. You know what I mean? It's not the same as an impression. Well, I fucking nail them. Oh. It's just a rather bad accent. Anyway, if you are from Liverpool and listening today, apologies. Right, so I think it's time. It is now time. It's 22 minutes past. So that was what I did this weekend. I've had a lovely old time and I am enjoying life. Now, so places, Lyme. Places in Dorset begin with C. Canford Cliffs, Canford Magna, Castleton. No.
Clunton Marsh.
I think it was
Cern Abbas.
Charlton. I think we were staying in Charlton.
Charlton Marshall?
No, just Charlton.
Charmouth.
Oh, Charmouth. It was Charmouth then.
Charmouth.
I've got no idea where I go, where I stay. You know, it's like that thing, because I'm a comedian sometimes. I don't really feel like I am anymore. So I'm a comedian, and so people say, wow, you must be really busy. What gigs have you got? And I'm like, I don't know. Well, they're like, what do you mean you don't know? How are you going to get there? And I'm like, well, I'll look it up on the day. They cannot believe it, because, you know, they're squares. Have you got any alter egos, Nat?
Do we have any alter egos? Do we ever pretend? No, I don't think so. Do we pretend to be other people, depending on who we're with, Nick?
I certainly got about four different versions of me.
Is one of them Jerry?
No. That's Jerry. What the fuck are you talking about? That's weird. Yeah,
lots of different versions. I suppose you're different, aren't you? You're different with who you are. I suppose you're different with who you're talking to on the phone.
No, no, no.
No?
No, I don't think so.
Fairly. I'm a lot like this a lot of the time.
I think you are.
Most of the time. I'm fairly, I'm pretty, where am I different around? Nah, I don't know if I do enter into the alter egos unless I've got some Tyler Durden type character that I've invented or something.
What about that time when we got drunk and you beat the shit out of me in a car park?
That's just me.
Oh.
That is just me.
That makes sense. That does actually make sense. Anyway, so here we are. I am Robot. Oh, hang on. I'm not playing the music. Is this, which one? There we go. Just turn the volume down before I'm told. Yep, done. So, this was on Monday. Is that when it was?
This Monday, was it?
I am Robot. Meh. Disappointing. It's the same episode every week. Have you moved it? Why have you moved it halfway through? Why would you do that? Why? You didn't do it, did you? I mean, that happened, right? Disappointing. It's the same episode every week. John Carpenter, blah, blah, blah. Alice Cooper, blah, blah, blah. Kurt Russell, blah. We don't hardly mention Kurt Russell at all. Maybe you've got your fucking ears fucking set to the same episode going on every fucking week.
Maybe you don't know how to use a podcast.
Maybe you don't know how to use my own podcast.
Listen back to the same one again.
Kurt Russell, blah. Edinburgh, blah. Nyssa, blah. Oh, anyway, the reason I brought up Charmouth.
Oh, yeah.
Charmouth.
You know, where you were at the weekend.
Yes! The reason I bring up Charmouth is because... there was a Nyssa local.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. It's a long and winding road, but we got there in the end. Anyway, that's Fan Club. I can't tell whether this is an actual criticism or not.
I can't tell, or it's a joke. But they have, even if it's a joke, they've apparently given us one of the ironic two stars people give us.
I mean, that is an ironic two stars. And who wouldn't like to hear about John Carpenter? Do you know what? Do you know how many podcasts are out there and radio shows and TV programmes and movies that don't talk about John Carpenter?
Exactly. I mean, loads don't.
Most of them don't, I would say. So
Line
I would say,
of Duty, The News.
Oh, fucking.
Gentleman Jack. None of them talk
Love
about.
Love Island.
Love Island.
Fucking hell.
Also, there's an incorrect spelling on Kurt Russell. I think it's a double L at the end.
Yeah, he's a fucking cunt and he knows it. I am Robot.
And
if you're
a robot,
you'd get the fucking spelling right. If you're an up-to-date robot, you'd have a spell checker.
Exactly. Like fucking Data from Star Trek or
like
someone.
Like Data. Make it so.
Make it so, Data. Spell check this, please.
Make it so. Oh, you sound like a gaggle of schoolgirls.
He's back.
Oh, God. That's it. Put him back in the box. No, let me out. Let me out. I'm not letting you out. Let's get rid of him. There you go.
Gunshot and cock.
There you go. Charmouth Stores, Nyssa. That's Fan Club. 5 stars. Here we go. Back to how it should be. Mark Granger, 5 stars. This was on the 2nd of June, 2019. Why? Who keeps fucking moving it? I mean, you're pointing at each other at the moment, but someone's fucking moving it. I'm trying to do my job. I've been meaning to write a review. Oh, come on. Just wait for this track to play out. Start it up again.
Howdy.
That's Fan Club. Mark Granger. 5 stars. I've been meaning to write a review of this for ages. A fantastic show. It's all about celebrating the things we love. Asterisk. Not asterisk. He's not suggesting we talk about asterisk. Asterisk. This review has been edited as per Nick's critiques.
Good. So he's listened to the shows. He's removed any critiques that we've... like any of the criticism we don't like. And what he's left with is a standard, solid 5-star review. Well done, Mark.
I don't totally understand... the asterisk that he's left us with.
I don't know why there's an asterisk followed by the remainder of the asterisk immediately afterwards.
He should have just
well, just carried on.
I think it's proof to say that, asterisks or not, Mark Granger is a cunt. This is a tweet from the Twitter platform. At Claire Taylor 20. That's Claire Louise Taylor, replying to Fubar, Nat Metcalf and the Nick Helm. You mentioned some kind of wonderful, such and great film and soundtrack. Oh dear. All thumbs, were we, Claire? Hi, Nick and Nathaniel Metcalf. This is from Lewis. Hi, Nick and Nathaniel Metcalf. Not Lewis from Morse.
Yeah, I think that's who it must be.
He's done a lot of investigating. And he's finally...
Well, he's the only Lewis I know of a single name.
Just Lewis. My God. Hi, Nick and Nathaniel Metcalf, comma. Just wondering, comma, what are the most seemingly overrated TV shows /films that you regret not watching at the time? What do you mean?
Oh, do you mean like if someone says...
Well, like Game of Thrones.
They go, oh, it's so great. Oh, it's so, and then you think, I wish I had watched that. But then if you watch it, you don't know till you've watched it, do you?
I don't think there's anything wrong with all of that, I have to say.
With all of what?
Well, just like people being enthusiastic about stuff. Well, obviously that's what our show's about. But I remember we were filming third series of Uncle, and every Stranger Things just come out, and every day people, and I think that this is the closest that you get to being, not the closest you get, but this was I think it's a close approximation to what it's like working in an office from when I worked in an office. Yeah, yeah. So you've got all different people that are there with different skills, and they're coming in and they're doing their job, and people make small talk all day, and that's part of the skill.
It's often what they find that they've got in common. All they've got in common is a thing they've both seen.
Well, then Stranger Things was a big thing, and it was like wildfire. It started at the beginning of the job, and then by like two weeks in, everyone was watching Stranger Things, and everyone was like going on about like how clever it is, and oh God, it's like all of the Spielberg movies, you know, but they've made something out of it, you know. And I watched like an episode, and
yeah, it was in the 80s, and I saw a Space Invaders.
And then it was sort of like, yeah, but that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. So I sort of watched it, and I was a bit like, oh.
Yeah, I was.
I was sort of disappointed. And then, like, maybe 2 years later, I watched them all, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I thought, yeah, it's great, and it is what it is. No, I don't think it's clever. I think that it's actually pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. They've just put it all in a grinder, and even to the point that they just basically copied it and hit the most successful horror film of all time. I don't know. So I just felt like, yeah, it was basically a rehash of Stranger. Like, even to the point that, you know, you've got in his bedroom, he's got posters of films that he wouldn't have possibly been able to see at that point. I think in Stranger Things, it's Beetlejuice and Gremlins.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
In it, it's... Is it Gremlins and Beetlejuice?
I didn't see it.
Did you not? I
didn't hear anyone say anything good about it.
We've talked about it before, but CGI. It's a film where the CGI absolutely ruins it, I think.
It is like a sort of 18 as well, isn't it? Because it sort of almost looked like it was trying to do a sort of PG horror
film.
I
don't think it was a PG horror film. I think it was like an R maybe.
So but, maybe like 15, 8 years.
But yeah, it was a 15, I'm sure. It was like, I think that the idea of, I don't know, I just find that Stephen King films, I just think, surely they're straightforward, right?
Mm.
How hard can it be to get them right? It seems impossible. And even the ones that people really love, it's because, you know, they've been reinvented to the point that Stephen King disowns them. I don't understand. Anyway, well, like, I tell you what, the most successful ones are the non-horror ones.
Yeah.
You have, like, Shawshank and Stand By Me, and you go, oh, they're brilliant. Dolores Claiborne is really good, actually.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And the ones that I enjoy probably more in hindsight are stuff like Needful Things, and I quite like the first half of The Stand, which was a TV series. But, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, not to get into that. But, like, so I would say that, not that I regret not getting into Stranger Things, but I think that other people's enthusiasm, oddly, can turn me off of stuff. And you can be quite possessive as well if you discover something. Mm. Like, I remember when I was at school, I was the only person that liked Alice Cooper. And that made me love him more. And the same with Bruce Campbell. Just I was the only person that watched Army of Darkness. And I would go around and I would force people to watch Army of Darkness. And then I would convert them over to be fans. But I think that if everyone had been going on about Army of Darkness, I wouldn't have got into it. And if everyone had been Alice Cooper fans.
You know. Yeah. I think I don't really do that well. And I think, I think when people are talking about things, I often think, ah, oh, well, I'll be the judge of that. And also, I find, like I think we've said lots of times, I find the commitment, it's always TV, it's always something on Netflix. And I always think that when I watch things on Netflix, the quality of them are never as good as something like HBO stuff or anything. You go, this isn't very good, but everyone seems to like love it. Well, everyone has Netflix.
We keep getting Happy recommended to us.
Oh, yeah,
which
yeah,
is that, it's sort of like a violent crime thing about a guy and an imaginary unicorn. I thought it was rubbish. Okay. But we keep getting it recommended, and people say, this is your sort of thing. And they go, I didn't really enjoy it. But I did only watch like the first couple of episodes, and I never really got into it. I didn't watch Breaking Bad at the time, and then I went back and watched it, and I really loved that.
I saw one series of Breaking Bad, and I enjoyed it, but then there's never been a point where I go, oh, I'll watch series two. Do you know what I mean? It just feels like when it had the natural break, I went, yeah, give it a break for a while now. And then I just never went back. But I enjoyed it. I was like going, I felt like, this is good, yeah, it's good.
Well, that's what happened with Game of Thrones with me, because Gemma Whelan's in it. And we know Gemma. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to watch it until Gemma, you know, not until Gemma turns up. But I'm going to watch it. And she turns up like three episodes in, four episodes in, two episodes into the second series. I watched the first series, and I was like, you know, I'd go home and watch an episode every night, and go, oh, I really, oh, I'm enjoying this, getting into it. And then I was like, oh no, Sean Bean. And then watched the second series, and I was like, you know, yeah, it's good. And then Gemma turned up, and was like, oh, there she is, there she is. And then it's kind of like, and then I didn't like make a decision not to, but I just never went back to it. And then it got to like, oh, it's 8-9 series in. I don't know how many series it is, but and you go, what a commitment. I can't do it all. So I don't really regret any of it. What I do miss is the ability to kind of like, I don't know, because geek culture maybe has become more mainstream, it kind of feels like your ability to pick and choose and to find stuff that means something personally to you is kind of, everything has to mean something to everyone.
Yes, yeah. I suppose that's everything. Everyone just wants to try and make connections, don't they, with each other? They just, because that's the thing.
I don't think
non-broadcast TV now, the nature of like on-demand TV would mean that you don't have those kind of what they would be like water cooler moments.
Yeah, but they're trying to justify their existence at the same time. They're trying to go, we can go toe to toe actually. And we can create must-see TV.
Yeah, and they do. That's interesting.
And it's weird.
It sort of shouldn't work that way, but it does.
But it's weird because it's there unlimited. You know, you can go back. It's not like you've got to watch it on Monday. It's there. You can
exactly. And yet, everyone chooses to virtually watch it at the same time because there must be something about that people like. People like to be part of the conversation.
I think but then there is stuff that is completely overhyped that. That I find is disappointing just by its very nature.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to think of a thing.
I had that with Russian Doll. I watched that and I was sort of, and everyone was saying how great it was, and it was quite short, and I went, oh, what's that, like 6.5 hours? Oh, I could probably do that. And it felt like the commitment wouldn't have been that bad. And I watched the first one and I was like, and straight away I was like, I don't know. And then I thought, do you know what, though? I'm being silly about this because there's 6.5 hours and there's obviously going to be like a massive payoff to this. And that's why I'm being a bit like the first episode didn't grab me. And I really persevered with it like, yeah, there's going to be a big payoff to this. And there just wasn't. And I found it a bit like, oh, OK, well, that was disappointing.
Yeah.
But I think, again, just because it was one of those things that if you discovered it by yourself, I might well have enjoyed it a lot more.
But it's weird, there are a few things. It's like, if everyone had told me that Tommy Boy was the funniest film ever made, and then I watched Tommy Boy, I would say, oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
And then I'd probably hate it a bit because everyone liked it so much. Mm. But because I don't know anyone really in England that rates Tommy Boy,
yeah.
I'm just like, I love this film. I probably love it more than it deserves because yeah. of the thing. But then there's stuff like, well, it's like when you look at, I know it's sort of very old, but when you watch a film like Casablanca,
yes.
I think that film is every bit as good as everyone has always said it was. Mm. And I was kind of like, well, it's not going to be that good, is it? It's going to be... And I watch black and white films and I watch old films and slow films, but I always thought, well, it looks old and slow. And Casablanca is just, I think, the, you know, not my favourite film ever, but I think it is the greatest film ever made. Mm. I think it's every bit as good as that. And then you look at something like Airplane... or Naked Gun, and everyone says, these are the greatest comedies of all time, mainly Airplane rather than Naked Gun. I would say Naked Gun is better. It's got, like, it is its own film as well as pastiching the genre, but it's got its own actual storyline that you can get invested in. And but everyone goes on about how great Airplane is, and I think Airplane is as good as what everyone says. So there's some that says, I can't think of... and I also thought Breaking Bad was as good as I was told it was.
Yeah, in general, the things everyone says are the best things are probably the best things.
I thought, well, I don't know, because I thought Stranger Things was kind of like obvious.
But I think that's more of a, that's not, I think that's a different thing. I think that's a thing where what people are liking about it is something more disposable. Like they don't like, it's almost like what we're talking about, the difference between something which is big now and something which stands the test of time, right? So sure. If like in 10 years when people are talking about the best telly that was around now, if this is the golden age, it's probably not going to be Stranger Things. It's going to be whatever's lasted and people have gone back to and gone. I think some films, have you ever seen Two Lane Blacktop? Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah.
I saw that
Who's
movie.
Who's the guy in that? Bruce Dern?
No, it's
James Taylor. And the fucking coolest man on the planet.
Dennis Wilson.
No.
Warren Oates.
He is so cool. He's fucking cool.
Absolutely brilliant.
He's the coolest dude. Fucking Warren Oates. Oh my God, Warren Oates.
Warren Oates, he's done that thing where you only see him in he's in a handful of films now, but he's in every film. He is like, wow. Have you seen Bring the Head of Alfred?
Yeah.
Incredible. I saw that for the first time like a year or two ago. And I thought I'd seen it, and I watched it, and that was one of those things you watch it and go, well, I mean, that's like a super 10 out of 10 film.
Yeah, because I went through a Peckinpah season, and I watched that. And then he's also in The Wild Bunch.
Yes.
He's like 50,
yeah.
And he's one of the young guys in the Wild Bunch. He was the captain in Stripes.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And that was sort of like my first introduction to Warren Oates. And it doesn't look like the same guy. I think it's because he doesn't have a moustache.
Yes, yeah.
But fucking hell, I love Warren Oates.
No, amazing.
Mm.
But Two Lane Blacktop was a film that I watched. Like, one of my friends would recommend it. It was one of his favourite films. And he was always recommending it to me. And I went, oh, yeah, it sounds good. I'll watch that. And I watched it and I was like, it's all right. It was okay. And then, but it had that thing where I just kept thinking about it afterwards, and then watched it again probably 6 months later. Like it just stays with you, and you go, I quite fancy watching that again, even though it hadn't made a massive impression on me. And second time I watched it, it's like you're watching a brand new film and going, like from like 5 minutes in, you're going, this is brilliant.
Yeah, I didn't love it, but I think that it's one of them films like Paris, Texas, where if you watch it on on at home on video or whatever. There's so many distractions, but I went to see Paris, Texas at the cinema, and you know, you're locked in and you're watching it, and it's just this really slow atmospheric film that unfolds. I think Two Lane Blacktop isn't necessarily a slow film, but it's like one of those films where you really need to give it the attention it deserves. It's not like, whereas, I mean, I've got to play a song, but whereas I just watched Venom today and I had it sort of on in the background while I was doing something else.
Best way.
And I don't feel like I missed out on any of it.
No.
Play a song and then. Yes. And then I don't think I played this before.
Yes, I know you're hungry. Ah, and here comes dinner.
Feel my Frankenstein! We'll be right back.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
I've turned some volume down and I don't know which one. Hello, my name is Nick Helm. This is, it doesn't matter. I don't mean it doesn't matter, but sorry. I just got halfway through the introduction and the introduction didn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
But this is Nathaniel Metcalf.
Feed my Frankenstein.
From the movie Wayne's World. That's Wayne's World.
Wayne's World. And I have been feeding myself some biscuits.
Sure. That's it. Alice Cooper's done two songs with Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Feed My Frankenstein and Teenage Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Neither once has he acknowledged the fact that Frankenstein is
the
creator rather than the monster. Find that actually bewildering. Once is foolish, but twice is like you're belligerent.
Well, in Feed My Frankenstein, what's he referring to?
His penis. I think it's his libido, but basically his dick, which is just, I mean, what is he putting into his dick? I mean, that's weird, right? Mm. You don't insert things into the... Unless you mean like...
A medical thing. Could be an like endoscopy.
Or like a piece of raw spaghetti. Just giving it a...
Yeah, people do that, don't they? A bit of raw spaghetti.
That's good, because if you put some raw spaghetti in it and then you bend your penis in half, the crack that it sounds like you're actually breaking your dick, but you're not. It's just the spaghetti.
You pull it out after 12 minutes.
You can't pull it out.
Is it?
You can't pull it out. You need to go for a jog until it cooks and then it sort of slithers out.
You get it.
If you're listening at home, don't
insert. You'll get like a pencil and wind it out.
Oh, you get one of them electronic pencils. Not electronic ones, what are they called? Mechanical pencils. You can put the lead from the mechanical pencil up your penis. Yep, that's what I'd do, definitely.
Well, people say, that'll put lead in your pencil. That's what they mean.
No, it won't put lead in my pencil. It'll put lead right up my penis. And then I will write a sonnet.
With the penis?
With my dick. Yeah, hands on my hips.
That's beautiful.
Where, have you taken all of the stuff off now? I mean, I've gone down. I see what you mean now. Yeah, on the no, it's gone. It's all gone.
It's all gone.
We've taken it all off.
That was Lewis who had said that question.
Lewis has asked a question about overrated stuff.
Mm-hmm. He'd suggested, I think his example was Fleabag and Killing Eve, was it?
I didn't even see his examples. Can you get the email back up?
I've noticed quite a lot of people have been reluctant to watch Fleabag / Killing Eve due to a perceived overhype that they are both perfect TV experiences.
I haven't watched Fleabag or Killing Eve to the extent that I should have.
I really like Fleabag. And I watched Killing Eve off the back of Fleabag, and I saw the first Killing Eve and was a bit meh.
But people
absolutely love it.
See, the thing is, I want to like stuff. I don't want to go in and feel like I've wasted my time or I've wasted... And I do find stuff that gets overhyped is... I just want to go in. My favourite things are the things that I've gone in with no preconceived expectations. I just go in wanting stuff to be good. And then, I've stopped watching trailers for stuff. Having said that, you know, I watched the Terminator trailer because I was very, very curious.
Still not seen it.
Oh, fucking hell. I mean...
I watched Last Blood trailer.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel like Rambo to me.
Mm.
It feels like, Stallone's doing a movie that's got a budget and it looks like, you know, it'll be in the cinemas and stuff. Yeah, great, brilliant. It's Rambo. If it wasn't called Rambo, you know, even the bow and arrow doesn't make it feel like Rambo. I just think, you know, I'm really interested in watching it and excited about watching it and all of that stuff. But I also, I mean, like I said, I feel like Rambo and Rocky have kind of like met in the middle now.
Yeah.
Where they're both. Thank you for my tea.
Thank you also for my tea.
What a way to start the weekend. This is a new, isn't it? What a way to start the weekend. Nick and Nat's funny quips and remarks about pop culture and pop drinks make the second half of my Friday. Why has that been highlighted by Natalie King? What, I mean, it says who's doing it now.
Yeah, we've got
Okay, Pop Drinks makes the second half of my Friday go that little bit faster. As an avid fan, I'd love it if you could take some time to discuss what I'm a fan of, Harry Potter. Favourite film from the 8-part saga. You've not seen
any of
the Harry Potter films, and I would say probably, for me, I've seen all of the Harry Potter films, and I would say my favourite film of the 8-part saga would be The Revenge of Smaug. Loved your chat with Oliver Harper about Disneyland and Alton Towers. As an avid, it'd probably be the last Harry Potter.
The last one?
Yeah.
I thought the best one's meant to be, the third one with Gary Oldman?
No, I think that that's the shortest one, and everyone said at the time, oh, it's the best one so far. Mm. But I think it's so abridged that from a non-reader,
it doesn't make sense.
I didn't know what was going on. But definitely stylistically it's changed. Christopher Columbus really didn't do a very good job at building. Mm. I think the first two just looked like cheap telly.
Well, that's like the Lord of the Rings film. By the time they had the third one, I've never read the Lord of the Rings books, and it was still 3 hours, and you're going, what's happened to all these? Where? And they just leave out some characters and go, yeah, but you'll buy the 8-hour version, won't you, when it comes out? And it's like, no, I just want to find out what happened to all the people I've seen in the first two.
Well, I think when Blu-ray took over and DVD took over from the viewing experience, you know, it sort of made a bit more sense. But at the time, Christopher Lee was absolutely gutted to be cut out of that third film.
And that's one of the reasons I went to see him, to be honest. Right, I was like, but he's not even in the third film. He's like, he's the main baddie, and he doesn't appear in the last film. Doesn't make any sense, right?
I, as an example of stuff that's overhyped, I really have never really got on board with the Lord of the Rings films. I enjoyed watching them every Christmas with my family as kind of spectacular stuff. But, spectacular, but it's up there with the 80s, 90s Chronicles of Narnia TV series.
Yeah, very much so. And I like them for what they were. But I think because of that, I wanted to some resolutions to things that you'd already watched. And the idea is like you go, was that Christopher Lee? Like I was while I was watching it, I was waiting for him to show up. And you go, I mean, he's the main bad guy, isn't he? And he's not. They just kind of cut him out.
But that's what Netflix. Crazy. Well, that's what episodic TV series do.
Yeah.
Oh, Westworld, I felt was completely overhyped. I found that, and I'm such a fan of the movie, the original 70s movie,
and the 70s
Michael
TV
Crichton.
Show.
And the 70s, what's that called? Beyond Westworld.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a really good question, Lewis. Thank you very much. If a couple more of you arseholes would write in something decent, then maybe we wouldn't be struggling every week and just talking about John Carpenter all the time. You're fucking blaming us. We literally say, tell your friends and write in if you want to talk about something. And you don't do it. So it's basically us, you know, swimming in our own piss. What a way to start the weekend. So that's a great question, Lewis. What a way to start the weekend. Nick and Nat's funny quips
and
remarks
about Alton Towers.
Alton Towers as an avid part. We did that one about Harry Potter. Theme park. Myself, I often dream about having my own theme park in the Hills Lake District with a ride that is somewhat like the scene from Kill Bill where she chops off Tanaka's head. Yes, chops off the top of Tanaka's head. I'm interested in what a fan club theme park would look like and what the signature ride would be. Cheers, Mark Tunbridge Wells. You would enter through
your car would be a bit of a mechanical pencil lead, and then you'd go into a penis tunnel.
You'd be fired into my penis tunnel, and we'd use up to date technology so that it would be like a fake tunnel. But the sensors on it would be electronically connected to my actual penis. So when you were walking up and down, we'd have to insist that you took your shoes off, and I would be able to feel all of your little toes walking up and down my urethra. And we'd spend so much money on it that there wouldn't be enough time to do anything else.
And it would also, like the one in Disneyland, we'd also have a filmed intro of Aerosmith telling us about
how they did it. So that would be the beginning, and then at the end I'd just shit you out into the gift shop.
And you'd have
to buy all of the merchandise.
You would have and everyone would be every ride would have Drew Carey sat with you. describing, I'm in this.
They'd be pointing at the exit. It'd be like, which would be like a recreation of my actual asshole. And Drew Carey would be stood outside going, I'm in this.
But the real Drew Carey.
But the real Drew Carey, yeah.
Not
yeah.
an animatronic Drew Carey.
No. The real Drew Carey. Not an animatronic repurposed Drew Carey from another ride. You should definitely
watch that video. That's good. What's it called?
Hollywood.
It's like limo, superstar limo.
Superstar limo.
There's a video on YouTube. I think
it's Defunct Land.
Defunct Land, there is, yeah.
There's a YouTube video about it. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Anyway. Hey,
it's Whoopi.
Thanks for your question, Mark. I hope that enlightened you. And there'll probably be a bit in the middle about John Carpenter. Hey, like the show. I don't think you speak about animals a lot. Which ones do you like? I'm studying the otter theory at the moment, and would be really interested to know what it is. And who is your favorite otter director? Cheers, Roddy. Well, Roddy, thanks for sending
thanks for
in
sending
that voice
audio
memo.
File. Yeah.
Who is your favourite auteur? Do you believe in the auteur theory?
Yeah. And I quite like those people who sort of deny it when they...
Well, there's more than one person that works in the film there, Nat.
No, but I think it's like... what I always think is interesting are the people that don't really see it in themselves. That, you know, you have all those guys and you go, well, not really. All those kind of old school directors often... They're a bit more. They sort of distance themselves from it, didn't they? They sort of like, that's ridiculous. And then, but they're often the ones that are most.
When you watch a film and you know it's by that person. My favourite auteurs are probably, you know, Woody Allen, Roman Polanski, Bryan Singer. Those are the best.
But no, I think you are right. But it depends on. Not every director is an auteur.
No, but Alfred Hitchcock was.
Yeah, but he is.
No matter, you can tell it's him.
Yeah,
Woody Allen is as well.
Woody Allen's a great example of a film you could watch 5 minutes of it from the dead.
You know what
of
it is from the credits,
and it'd be like Woody Allen film.
Yeah, well, you know what it is from the opening credits, just like because it says Woody Allen. But you can say that about most directors, actually. Oh no, he's doing it again.
Here we go.
Here he is.
Here we go. When was this made? Oh no, it was made about 2 years ago.
2018. Yikes. Who is? I would say. I mean, it's obvious, though, isn't it? I would say John Carpenter is an auteur.
Mm,
I would say Alfred Hitchcock is an auteur. I'd say Quentin Tarantino is an auteur.
Mm.
I'd say Robert Rodriguez doesn't really feel like one anymore. He used to, but then I think that any like voice that he. Or the style that he had has kind of like been filtered out through his overuse of like bad CGI.
And I think it's like, and I mean, that's one of the reasons you can probably spot a Robert Rodriguez film though from the sort of weird CGI he uses. You go, like what he's done is like what seems to be quite cheap CGI. Mm. But I quite like,
well, because he does
like
it in his garage.
Aesthetic. Yeah, I like
he's got
his
like he's got what you call it a ranch.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Tim Burton is, Wes Anderson is, David Lynch is. Yeah, but I really loved early Tim. Oh, that sounds so poncy, doesn't it? Everything up to about Sleepy Hollow, I really liked.
We're discussing this. I was discussing this the other day with someone, and actually, I liked it. Yeah,
was it me? You know,
like it's no sort of the Tim Burton stuff. You go, I forgot how many of his films I really liked up until. I think it's more that he's now a product, isn't he? Like a Tim Burton film is a product.
Yeah.
And now he knows how to make Tim Burton films, except for they've lost what was good about
them.
They're
too slick in a way. Mm. My favourite Tim Burton, two favourite Tim Burtons is Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Edward Scissorhands.
Mm-hmm.
And Edward Scissorhands is like, oh, he's nailed it. And Pee-wee's Big Adventure is just a fucking great film, I think.
I like all those. I think Edward and... Maybe something like Batman Returns. I was absolutely, but partly because I think I'd just forgotten how much I liked it.
Sure.
And until I saw it the other week, I was like, "What? What a great movie!"
I mean, back in the day, I really loved him. But then he's never learnt to tell an interesting story. Mm. It's all visuals, and I find the films, although visually stunning, they don't have many parts that I look forward to, and I don't find them particularly entertaining or fun.
And I think it's more that recently it feels like he has more misses than hits in terms of like just good. Like when you start doing like a bad movie, you go, that wasn't very good. And then you watch the next one, and it's now like, it's like you're in the second half of his career, where it's just, are there any good ones?
Yeah. And I would also say my favourite, Dario Argento.
Oh, yeah.
But I would say I love Hitchcock, and I love Dario Argento, but I'd have to probably give it a little bit more thought, because it's not David Lynch, it's not Sofia Coppola. I love two or three Wes Anderson films, like With a Passion and any others I can sort of take and leave. Tim Burton, half an amazing career. And then the rest is great. It's fine. I mean, I wouldn't say great. Mm. I wouldn't say the Alice in Wonderland sequel is great, or the original. Or, you know. Anyway, it's complicated. Anyway, or Planet of the Apes, you know, fucking hell. Right, our guest is here, so we're going to play a song. Is it David Bowie?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, I stood stone like a midnight, suspended in my masquerade. I combed my hair till it was just right, and commanded the night brigade. I was open to pain, crossed by the rain, and I walked on a crooked perch. I stumbled all alone through a far out zone, came out with my soul untouched. My head in the cloud, and wrath of the crowd, and when they set me down, I stood up. Ooh, growing up. The bag of piracy flew from my mast, my sails were set wing to wing. I had a jukebox graduate for first mate. She couldn't sail, but she sure could sing. I pushed a B-52 and bombed her with the blues. With my kids at stubborn standing, I broke all the rules. Saved my old high school. Never once gave thought to bending low. And I get in the clouds, they won't stop the crowd. When they said come down, I move on.
Is it too loud for you?
It's okay. It's all right. It's perfect.
Right. Okay, cool. We're joined in... It's perfect?
Yeah. It's perfect.
No one ever says that. That's great.
Just right.
We're joined in the studio by Nick de Semelian. I mean, that's fucking appalling.
It's close.
Go on, say it.
De Semelian.
Dissemblian.
Dissemblian.
Right, yeah, sure.
It's as it's spelt, isn't it?
It's exactly as it's spelt.
But it's a bit like the Steve Martin character name in Man with Two Brains. Everyone says it differently. It's absolutely fine.
I think my go-to would have been Semelian. And it isn't. When I looked at it,
That's what I thought. Long ago when we were booking you, I thought she was booking a sommelier. And I thought, no, that's great. If they're a fan of wine.
Ironically, I'm terrible at pouring wine, so.
You're terrible at pouring wine, but are you terrible at tasting wine?
Yeah.
Oh. Are you terrible at pouring wine after you've been drinking wine?
Just anything wine-related, I'm bad at.
It sounds like you have a real drinking problem. Am I right? Sorry if you do. Do you used to write? You still write for Empire magazine?
I still write there. I work there in the office.
For the last 15 years, I hear.
Coming up to 15.
And what was your first review?
My first review, I did Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed.
Wow. And was that better than the original? Did you see the original?
I have seen the original. I think they're both pretty bad.
Right, but if you had to pick one?
Probably the first one. Do I have to?
Which one's got Rowan Atkinson in?
Oh my gosh.
One, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And does he turn out to be, he's the bad guy, and they take his mask off, and he turns out to be Scrappy-Doo?
Sounds right.
Yeah, that's right, wasn't it?
Spoiler alert.
I don't like that kind of...
I've not seen it. I just am that much of a expert that I know facts.
James Gunn from Guardians of the Galaxy was involved in those films.
Absolutely. He wrote them, didn't he?
Surprising, yeah.
Well, because back then he was from Troma. So he came from Troma. So what was really weird was it was just before he did Slither, right? Yeah. So he came from Troma and then he wrote the Scooby-Doo movies. And I think... wasn't the aim, because it had Matthew Lillard and stuff, that it was going to be more of a stoner movie. Mm. And I think for a while Mike Myers was in it
as
Shaggy.
Yeah.
And I think he could do a Scooby-Doo impression, so he was linked to it for ages, and then it was like, oh no, we'll cast it young. And then they really... I think there were a couple of drug references in it, and then they didn't do any in the sequel. But these are films that I haven't seen.
They're films that I've barely seen. But yeah, that was an early one. One of my first reviews was a Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre film called The Wash. Have you seen that one?
No. Oh, is it a remake of...
Kind of Car Wash. They're running a car wash. Eminem pops up in it. It's pretty bad. I gave it 3 stars.
Do you give it 3 stars?
3 stars is quite good, right? That's pretty good.
That's good.
I regret it. Yeah, right. I'm not sure it is 3 stars. I haven't revisited. But
did you feel the pressure when you first started that you had to give things positive praise?
I think I was just excited. I was just excited.
Yeah.
And they give you a free drink. God, I really do sound like I've got a drinking problem. But,
no.
You know, you go in and I was just excited to see a film for free. And so maybe I was a little bit generous. Yeah.
Oh, that was a cinema review.
That's why they give you a free drink, though. Well, you go to previews. Oh, you get a free can of Coke or something.
They ship you over to Arizona to be on the set of Crystal Skull. And they say, well, what do you think of the movie? Hey, we've got some other films coming out next year. Do you want to... Evil.
Yeah, I'm a bit wiser to their tricks now. But
from the sound of it, though, could it be that when you start Empire Magazine, the editors go, give him Scooby-Doo 2 and The Wash? Do you reckon they have specifically picked those out because you're new, and no one else wants to go.
Definitely.
Is that what happened?
Definitely.
And is that something that you...
That sounds actually... we've got to earn your stripes. And you go, I had to review Bean, the Ultimate Disaster Movie, when I started, so you can review Scooby-Doo 2.
That's not a good film. Bean, the Ultimate... Is that the full title? I don't speak about it a lot, but I call it Bean.
I think it came out during the spate of disaster movies in the late 90s, mid to late 90s.
Yes.
And so when it came out, it was Bean, the Ultimate Disaster Movie, which was weird because they just recreated a lot of the sketches from the film. Mm. But
it's got Burt Reynolds in it.
It's directed by Mel Smith.
Just weirdness all around.
Absolutely crazy movie. But Reynolds is a security guard.
Uh-huh.
It's got Willem Dafoe in it, hasn't it? Or is that the sequel?
That's the terrible, terrible sequel.
I haven't seen any of them.
Yeah. I think my memory is he kills someone in that film accidentally, Mr. Bean. That's my memory. I may be wrong. I don't want to besmirch him.
An accidental killing.
A bean aside.
I would say most of what this show is me and Nick... but basically repeating facts that we read in Empire magazine
I would say
in 1996, which the other one says, Yes, I know. I also read it once in Empire 24 years ago.
And also with Empire, I've had arguments with people because they have literally just quoted Empire reviews back to me as their own opinions. And I've gone, I've got that issue. I can get it. I can get it. What was my first issue of Empire? It was like, maybe it was like 92 or something like that. Mm. And then I went and got some back. Dated ones.
Yeah,
I had them all up until I would say the early 2000s.
Yeah. So unfortunately it feels like we've stopped reading Empire about the time you started.
I won't take it to you. I think it was probably my Scooby-Doo 2 review.
That was the last thing I read.
When I went to the cinema and spent my hard-earned £3.50 on The Wash, I was just like,
Three stars, mate.
You can see three stars over your arm.
It's Dr. Dre operating a car wash. I think there's, you know.
I mean, I'm sure there's some value to it.
So you've just written a book, it's been out since June the 6th.
Yeah.
It's called Wild and Crazy Guys. Tell us a little bit about that, Nick.
Gonna fool Bruce Forsyth there. it's really about the comedy titans. I like the word titans, so I'll use that. The big comedy icons of the 80s. You know, Steve Martin, Bill Murray, Eddie Murphy, Chevy Chase, John Candy, Rick Moranis, those guys. And I was lucky enough to meet quite a few of them and interview them for Empire over the years. And I kind of started hearing their stories and thought, there's a book in here, because the 80s was an insane time in Hollywood generally.
Yeah,
I think,
sure.
But especially for comedy.
Because it says here that you've... not only does it say that this is the 80s comedy Easy Riders Raging Bulls, but you've also got a cover quote from Peter Biskind.
I was super. I mean, I continue to be super happy about that.
That's an incredible achievement.
Yeah,
that's
been one of the biggest holy shit moments out of the whole thing. Because I read that book at university.
That's an amazing book.
Yeah,
I love it, and I've read it several times.
It's one of three books I've read.
What are the other two?
The hardback version of that. The paperback version of that, and then he did a follow up, didn't he, about the indie 50s, scene in the 90s.
He did the 50s alien invasion sci-fi films as well.
Yeah, so there was, and the one about what Tarantino and
what was that one called?
Down and Dirty Pictures.
Yes.
Yeah. But I was.
I've got that. I haven't quite cracked the spine on that one.
Peter Bogdanovich is upset by Easy Riders Raging Bulls, and whenever he talks about it, he goes, "You know what I call it? Easy Riders Raging Bullshit." And every time he says that, it always makes me laugh. And I think, you're not that smart, are you, Peter?
That's a good line. That's
as
a
if,
good
like,
line.
He thinks really, he thinks he's really nailed it with that.
I think that's funny.
You know what I call it?
I think everyone is angry with that book, though, because I interviewed William Friedkin not too long ago, and I mentioned the book, and I probably shouldn't have. And he flew off the handle a little bit.
But what's that book based on? So it wasn't based on original... interviews.
Once he talked to everyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why are they pissed off about it? I just read it. It's a great read, and I've seen the film that they made out of it. I love it. Is it Biskind or Biskind?
Biskind, I think.
I got it right.
And he's I've completely lost my train of thought.
We don't need to talk about this book.
No, we don't need to talk about another book.
Talk about your book.
But I love that book, and I'm super happy that he's read it. That's still very surreal, the thought that he's read it. Yeah,
I think that's incredible. Yeah.
I guess he really loves, you can tell, he really loves Hal Ashby. That's what I always get from that book, and it's like, that's his favourite, and that's who he most wants to talk about.
Have you gone back to Raging Bull? Easy Riders Raging Bull?
You know what I call that book?
You not to.
Easy Riders Raging Bullshit.
Yes.
No,
do you know what I call it? An easy read. Because I really love that, but just like it flows over the eyes.
Although that gives you a very good indication of what your book is like, so immediately I go, "Oh, I get what this is." Immediately.
So I've read the Saturday Night Live book, the really comprehensive one that talks about all of their careers up until they left Saturday Night Live. And so, not that this is a follow-up, obviously, but this just offers like. The next step in their career, right?
Yeah, it kind of was. Those books were in my mind because I've read quite a few books about Saturday Night Live, but there was no book after that. And even Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up, which is really, really good,
stops just before. Yeah.
And so I interviewed him for actually The Pink Panther 2. I got this great sit down for
great fucking movie.
Great movie. He loves it. But
does he?
Yeah. He, well, we had this sort of mini.
Was it at the time that it was coming out though?
Yeah, but he sounded quite earnest about it. We sat down for an hour in this hotel and got to talk about a whole bunch of different ones of his films, and he's quite cool on ones that are amazing.
And was, really?
And
that's
he doesn't like The Man with Two Brains. He's not really that keen on The Jerk anymore. And so I had a little bit of an argument with him, which was quite surreal, of going, no, 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 those are good films. And he was like, no, they're not. And I was going, yeah, they were.
And he's promoting and, The Pink Panther.
I suppose he's done so much since that, I mean, I'm doing a show that I did 10 years ago because everyone has always said, oh, that was your best show. Not because of that, but because I do really like that show. But it doesn't annoy me. But I think that if I was Steve Martin and I had mastered so many different things, you know, he's a magician. I'm always going on about this. But like, he's a magician. He's a screenwriter. He's a movie star. He was the biggest stand-up comedian on the planet. He's a playwright. He's an author. He's, you know, he's a musician. He's mastered all of these different techniques. And if people kept going on about the first fucking film I'd ever made, I don't know. I mean, at least it's not Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club.
Yeah. Where he plays, he's Maxwell, isn't he?
Is he Maxwell Hammer?
With his silver hammer.
Yeah, it's fine.
But I kind of get it. And, you know, the more I kind of, like, did research for the book, the more I realised those films didn't do very well for him as well. So I think there's an element
of that.
They
didn't do well.
The Jerk did do well, but the critics hated it. Mm. And then pretty much everything he made for the first half of the 80s, although they've all dated really well, got savaged and no one went to see them, and so I think he's probably still a bit.
Oh, that's extraordinary, because I guess just the age I am, you sort of grow up with those films and they're always almost like absolute diamonds as well. There's like almost like faultless, especially The Jerk. I kind of think he's like one of those, like, I find it virtually faultless and so funny, like scene to scene.
I think the first three quarters of The Jerk is just non-stop, and then when the plot kicks in towards the end, I'm just done. But I hadn't seen Man with Two Brains in ages, and then I watched it. And that I never really got 100% on board with that. Because when video shops existed, like Steve Martin used to be our Friday night pick, you know, you'd go, mm-hmm. when I was like five or six or seven, you know, it'd always be Steve Martin. And I just love him so much. And Man with Two Brains, I think, was slightly too grown up for me. And then I watched it again recently. I was just like, every single scene is almost like a self-contained pastiche of a element of a of like a like an old horror film or something. And it's just quite a complicated film because as a whole film, it works much better in episodic chunks where you go, he's doing a pastiche, his character is a pastiche, like everything about it is pastiching something. I think it's just incredible, really. But at the time, I found it, you know, a bit difficult to get into. Yeah.
So what films of his does he like?
Well, he said to me that he had a very short list. He didn't read the list out, he didn't get a list out, but okay. He said he's got a very short list of films he's made that he thinks is funny. Pink Panther 2 was on there.
That's because he's selling it. He's doing what Harrison Ford, you know.
Always. I don't know, it just seems weird. Like,
you've got to know when to sell the car, kid.
Yeah, maybe. It just seems weird that they would be the one. I don't, because also I think, I always think now, I find him frustrating, because I think, like, I know he's still funny. And when he seems to do a lot of these movies to pay for, you know, his art habit, seems to be what his sort of later career is. Whereas I kind of, when he sort of pulls something out of the bag and you feel like he's, or something that he's also written or has some sort of hand in scripting, you always go, yeah, like that.
Yeah. I mean, he's still super funny. I think he's hilarious on Twitter.
Yeah.
Actually released a book of his tweets.
Well, he released, there was the Steve Martin interview book as well, wasn't there, where he did all of his interviews from, like, Playboy magazine stuff from, like, the mid-70s. And it took it all the way up to, the last chapter was his tweets, and you go, really? You're finishing on some of your favourite tweets? It's like when Twitter was quite new, but then he's kind of, like, really ran with it.
So anyway, backtrack a little bit. So so his book ends with a jerk, and he, you know, when I met him, I said to him, why haven't you done a book about all the movies you made in the 80s? He went, oh, no one's interested, you know,
he's just crazy,
no one's interested,
he's wild and crazy guy.
So that was pretty wild and crazy, but he said, you know, no one's interested. A film got made and then another film got made, and I just thought, no, there's got to be stories behind these films. And there were, fortunately, otherwise there wouldn't have been much of a book. But there's loads of stories, and you kind of see why he might not want some of them to be told. But,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Does he really love Three Amigos?
He does love Three Amigos.
But he loved making that film, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, I orchestrated a, for Empire, I orchestrated a Three Amigos reunion, which is maybe the favourite thing I've ever done. And, you know, they're tough to pull off, like, cast reunions.
Yeah.
But that one was so easy. So I sent an email to Steve Martin's manager, and within an hour, I'd not only got a Steve wants to do it, but Steve has called Chevy and Martin, and they're up for it as well. So I was like, wow, okay, this is really easy. And then we ended up getting Three Amigos costumes from some Three Amigos impersonators in Miami that we found.
Right.
One of whom is Martin Short's nephew.
What?
So weird, the whole thing. So we got them FedExed across America to LA and flew out and got them to put their costumes on. And Chevy couldn't remember how to do the salute, so Steve Martin was teaching him how to do
it. Is it online?
You can read it online. It's on the Empire website. There's photos of them. This was about 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
That's amazing.
And so he obviously loves that one.
Yeah. Mm. But I partly think he might, again, like maybe he just enjoys films that he had a nice time at. So I know he and Martin Short are meant to be like best mates, aren't they? And they.
Well, they did that Netflix special.
Right, okay.
Because I took my dad to see, because my dad is a musician, amongst other things. And I took him to see Steve Martin play banjo at the Hammersmith Apollo.
Oh, wow.
And I don't think it was selling very well. So then they said, and he's doing comedy, like right at the last minute to be going. So we went to see it. And yeah, that Netflix special was basically what he did on that tour. But
What percent of that was comedy and what percent was banjo?
It was, the comedy was introducing the songs. And then there'd be a couple of lines that it'd do to the rest of the musicians. And he wasn't the singer, which I found like, oh, of course we want to hear him sing. Oh, look, there they are. Oh, they're so... I love Martin Short.
Yeah.
I think Three Amigos, controversially, is Chevy Chase's best film.
I agree.
I can't always tell what Chevy Chase is going for in his films. But I don't really necessarily know what the comedy is. Like in something like... Caddyshack, I'll watch it and I'll go, he just seems to me that he's being really arrogant, and I can't tell how much of that is Chevy Chase turning up on set like being a dick, or how much of it is a character. But in Three Amigos, it's such an endearing, well-rounded it's an ensemble, but he fits in the puzzle and it's just absolutely great. And he steals all of his scenes. He's just fantastic.
Yeah, because he's kind of making fun of himself and his image of being this arrogant guy.
Right,
there's a great scene where they're riding on the horses through the desert and Steve Martin's run out of water. Martin Short's got dust, and then they cut to Chevy Chase and he's just like got so much water he's like gargling and then he chucks it away. One of my favourite
Lip Balm. It's amazing. Oh, and the songs in it are great. So because Steve Martin wrote the Three Amigos, but he wrote it with Randy Newman and Lorne Michaels. And interesting, because Randy Newman is obviously the musician, but the songs in Three Amigos are great. It's just such an amazing, lovely film.
Yeah, I love it.
So many weird bits in it as well, like the singing bush and the Invisible Swordsman.
Yeah, the voice of Randy Newman.
The talking tortoise. It's like Ned. It's like, yeah.
It's so weird. Yeah, I'd love that one. I don't know quite where it came from. Steve Martin obviously was the one who like came up with the idea in the first place, but
I think that was badly reviewed at the time, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was another one.
So it can't be that it was the reviews that puts him off.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think he probably did the reunion. I think he said it in the interview we did afterwards. I got to sit around a table with them all and talk to them for half an hour, which was kind of mind-blowing. I think that they kind of got back together because they felt the film had been unfairly maligned. So I think it does sting them. Like, even though you look at them and you go, Steve Martin's so successful, made so many films, but I think, you know, something he puts is...
Of course, and they're the ones you remember, aren't they? Like, people don't retroactively... Steve Martin doesn't get to have the nostalgia and enthusiasm everyone who watched it has. The only kind of reviews these people get is what comes out on the first weekend, and they probably remember what someone said of it. Mm. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if it was on TV on Saturday, on Monday at school, everyone would be coming in doing the Amigo salute, and literally you would rent out a Steve Martin video on Saturday night, you'd watch it, and then you'd watch it again on Sunday morning, and then you take it around your friend's house and watch it again, and then return it on Sunday evening. And incredible. You also met Chevy Chase?
Yeah, so that's the one time I've met Chevy Chase, was at the Three Amigos thing. Mm-hmm. he couldn't remember anything. So it was kind of a running joke in the they take the piss out of each other, those three guys as well. But yeah, the running joke was Chevy Chase just occasionally going, "I don't remember any of this." He also wasn't wearing any trousers during the interview, which was quite enjoyable. It was quite a nice sort of Chevy Chase moment.
Chevy Chase, I often think of, he's quite good at being a leading man. He's got that sort of almost like and I suppose Martin is as well. Actually, Chevy Chase and Steve Martin both have the thing where they're also quite good-looking people. So they can pass for leading men. Steve Martin, especially in the kind of
1970s with the beard, when he's got got Cat Stevens hair.
Yeah, have you seen the cover of Playboy with him on there?
No,
I may have done.
It's him. It's him like surrounded by women, like with his shirt wide open. I mean, it's
you totally buy it as a leading man. He's not like, they're not unusual looking people. Like Chevy Chase passes for leading man as well, and I think he's someone who
Chevy Chase is like Cary Grant good looking.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. He's got that kind of. But that's what I mean. He sort of passes for Hollywood good looking. He's not like, they're not obvious kind of comics in that way. Mm. They can pull that off. And I actually think Chevy Chase is probably better in those kind of movies like Fletch, where they're sort of slightly straighter versions of it. And I think that idea of Chevy Chase is probably better than he is in the kind of wackier end. Mm.
I don't know. And Christmas Vacation is. I watch Christmas Vacation every Christmas. I love him in that. That's his best Vacation as well.
Mm. That is the best one.
That's the best one.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Sorted.
These are all my favourite films. I just want to just
do you do like when we're talking about Peter Biskind, and it says that he has an obvious kind of. It feels like he's got a real affinity for Hal Ashby films. Mm. Within this list of people, who are the people that you are most enthusiastic about talking about, and who are the ones that you're a bit like? And they were also there, yeah.
I kind of enjoyed writing about all of them. That's a lame answer. I mean, there are definitely ones I'm more kind of interested in. I find Dan Aykroyd super interesting.
He is fascinating.
I find him, and I've got to speak to him a bunch of times, and he is just endlessly interesting and kind of eccentric, and we'll do a 9-minute monologue about vibrating crystals you can use to cut through to another dimension, which is something we talked about once. But you kind of just hang on and go for the ride with him when you talk to him. But just the fact that Blues Brothers came from his brain, Ghostbusters came from his brain. I mean, the man is responsible for like a lot of the really iconic stuff that we got out of that era. And I really enjoyed writing about Eddie Murphy. He's the one that's still alive that I haven't got to meet.
Right.
But I loved writing about him, and the stories are brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, weirdly, I watched Bowfinger this week quite randomly, and I've always considered that to be both of their last great movies.
Yes.
Because every time I watch a film, I'll do a little post about it on Twitter. I've got to do like a little tweet-sized review of it. And I put a poster with it. And the posters, when it was coming out, were together for the first time, Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy. And you go, yeah. And I think it felt like quite a big deal at the time. And they're both so fantastic. Eddie Murphy particularly, when his brother turns up and he plays his brother, I think Kit Ramsey is like a great character, but when his brother turns up, it's just kind of like, oh my God, it's just Eddie Murphy doing like the character comedy that he's really great at, but didn't do loads of in the 90s. I really love.
Yeah.
All I think of even then people. It felt like a bit of a comeback for them both as well. Yeah. Like a bit like, here they are, they're back, they're doing it. And even at that point, which would be what, 95-ish?
Bowfinger.
Yeah,
I think it was like 99.
Yeah, was it like that?
Yeah, it was a bit later.
I think it was 99. I think it was part of the great year of 99.
Right. So it was also at a point where both of them were probably doing films that were probably less than their talents.
Yeah.
And it really did feel like a real bit of a comeback. Where does your book go up to?
It goes up to Groundhog Day.
Right, okay.
So it goes up to 93, 94.
Did you talk about the making of Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
That's really fascinating,
isn't it? Yeah, I finish with a kind of... The final chapter is about nothing, but it finishes basically, you know, you had to pick an end point for each of them. So it's Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase end on a kind of a low point, Nothing But Trouble, which Dan Aykroyd wrote and directed, which was a big disaster.
I've watched a long documentary about that.
Oh my goodness.
It's a weird film. It's such a weird, it's an unpleasant film.
It's icky, yeah. You don't feel good watching it.
Have you ever seen the film Out on a Limb with Matthew Broderick?
Oh, no, but I have. I saw it in the video store when I was a kid.
It's kind of, we talked about that last week. It's like Nothing But Trouble. It's the same sort of, has the same sort of feeling like that. It's like this madcap comedy, but when you're watching it, it feels like you've got a fever.
Mm.
It's,
the
yeah.
prosthetics are quite, yeah.
Well, also Dan Aykroyd's nose is a penis. Like he has this dick nose, and in some scenes there's kind of like the it changes from shot to shot, but in some scenes he's got a little pee hole.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just fucking insane.
Well, yeah, one of my favourite stories, I talked to a guy called Bob Crane, who was John Candy's business partner.
Mm.
And John Candy obviously plays a couple of characters in Nothing But Trouble, but yeah, he told me that Chevy Chase, it wasn't a happy set. Because Dan Aykroyd was not only under all these horrible prosthetics, but trying to direct at the same time.
Mm.
And it was just kind of carnage. But Chevy Chase would sort of let loose with a fart when he wasn't happy, when things were running late. So he would just do a loud fart on set. So that was going on as well. But so that was kind of Dan Aykroyd. That was where I left Chevy Chase with his chat show, which was obviously a kind of... I don't know if you guys have seen any
episodes. Oh, yeah.
Of that.
Well, the bit when him and Goldie Hawn danced together in celebration of her son's birthday for like 3 minutes. They're on stage. It's just the most... cringiest thing. It's like, oh no, this isn't telly. It was awful. But yeah.
And then for Bill Murray, you know, I wanted to end the book on a bit of a high note, and that was Groundhog Day, which came out amazingly. And I think it's like a transition from those like really broad comedies these guys were doing to something more philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
And he obviously went on to do lots of dramas and work with great directors. But yeah, that was a fun movie to write about because it was really unhappy.
He was.
Where he was really unhappy. He wasn't talking to Harold Ramis, who was directing it.
Yeah. Do you write about Harold Ramis?
A little bit, yeah. He comes up, obviously, in quite a bit. Yeah. Ghostbusters. And, I mean, it's sad because they started out as really close friends. And Bill Murray insisted that he, Harold Ramis, star in Stripes with him because he wanted to do it with a friend. And then they fell out to the point where they weren't speaking. And
that lasted all the way to...
And that sort of... I don't know when it began, but yeah, definitely on Groundhog Day, they weren't communicating at all.
Well, is it more that Harold Ramis wanted to make a broader comedy, and Bill Murray wanted it to be more philosophical,
yeah,
and existential, and then it was the two of their opinions basically fighting each other,
yeah,
and
exactly.
You end up with the film that you got. And I just think I would say that is. It's Bill Murray's best film, and I would say that is one of the greatest comedies in the last 30 years. Is it over 30 years now? No, it's almost 30 years.
Coming
it's 93, was it?
93.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's an incredible
film. I wonder if they're happy with the finished result. Do you know?
Yeah, well, Bill Murray skipped the premiere, so he didn't watch the film for a long time. It was weird because he got really involved. You know, usually he would turn up on set in the 80s and not having read the script and just kind of improvise his way. But with Groundhog Day, it was the opposite. Like, he actually did an unauthorized rewrite. He took the script away and no one knew he was doing it, but he rewrote it and turned up like a couple of weeks before, and they'd already built the sets. And so
and
he
was
really,
saying, this is the film we make.
So he was like, let's do this. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, the back and forth was between Ramis and Murray's different version of the film, which came out really well, the mix.
I think it's incredible.
Because it's
funny, and it makes you think, and it says something about life and humanity, and it's incredible.
I saw it at the Prince Charles Cinema last year on the big screen. I'd never seen it on the big screen before, and I got quite teary at the end. Like, it really is emotional.
I think it's that kind of film. I mean, I remember, I think it was quite an emotional film because I watched it 1 year during the Edinburgh Festival, where everything's very near the surface. So you do go, oh, God.
It doesn't take much to tip you. No, it really doesn't.
But, like, I think it is. I think it's a real... I think it really does say a lot about the way you sort of live your life. And
but also, he made Scrooged. And it's kind of like Scrooge is kind of like it doesn't quite work, and it's a bit, it's very like 80s and excessive and like.
I think I really love it.
It's the same arc. Do you know what I mean? Of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you see, like with Groundhog Day, it's basically the Christmas Carol arc, but not set at Christmas.
Well, it's kind of the best story of Christmas Carol, isn't it? That's why. I mean, It's a Wonderful Life is a sort of weird remake of it as well, where it's like, but what if it wasn't? What if it's not the guy who's a dickhead? It's just a reworking of that same idea, isn't it? You've got this very basic kind of story thing that just keeps getting remade and remade. Various times.
Scrooged was another unhappy shoot. Sort of a bit of a running theme with Bill Murray films that he was quite difficult on a lot of them, despite having this kind of reputation as being this lovable kind of rogue.
Is that because he was going for something? Is he always like reaching for something, you think?
Yeah, I think so. He always wanted to kind of be a dramatic actor, like right from the beginning. He really didn't want to make kind of just pure comedies. So he did this film where he played Huntress Thompson really early on. He did his movie, his Somerset Maugham film. And so I think he definitely always wanted to be a dramatic guy. Yeah.
But also, I think that that's a good thing.
I don't think
you have to be likable in order to... I think that there's a likable way of doing things, but you turn up on set and you're making a comedy and you are a comedian, for instance, and you have a distinct style of comedy and other people are dictating to you how you perform.
Yes.
You have to actually stick up for yourself and say, no, this is and this is what I consider good, and it's my name on the title, and it's my face on the poster. Mm. And, you know, and so... That can often lead to, I'm not talking from personal experience, that can often lead to difficult times on set. And then when you're not on set, you can be the normal person you are. But when you're at work, you have to fight your corner.
No, you're right. And from the sort of generation me and Nick are, even of people that we know have done sort of TV things. And often you go, they're so funny as live comedians, but they've been put in a sort of TV project that they've had no real control over. And you go, I mean... If you saw, that's everyone's introduction to those people on TV, and they've sort of killed it for them because now it's just like they're in a not very funny TV show. Mm. And it's like, why don't they just let them do what they would do on stage? Because that would be the best way to represent them. Yeah. And I always think that. So I think they are right to stick up for themselves.
Yeah.
And to try and get something of what they are on screen.
I would say that is 100% of what's happened with Bill Murray in his working environment. Mm. And also, yeah, he's striving for something else. But a lot of the time, you know, give and take, if you're both pulling in different directions and then the compromises that you make in order to get things, I think Groundhog Day is an absolutely amazing example of that.
Yeah.
It's a perfect film,
yeah.
I would say.
No, what you said a minute ago, it makes you think about the way you live your life. Because I remember coming out of the screening and going, kind of resolving to be a better human being. And it's like, how many comedies make you genuinely want to do that?
And it's about it's people that have that thing about, you know, doing the same job every day and going, you don't have to, you can change at any point, you can change your life and do something else. And it's very like, what a great way, like, what a great idea.
They show you that in the film. Whereas at Scrooge, he says it directly to the camera. He's like saying, it's not too late to change. He does that whole monologue. And it's just like, the whole of Groundhog Day is basically that monologue.
It's incredible.
You obviously really loved writing about Eddie Murphy. Mm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think he was just the opposite of, well, totally the opposite of Bill Murray, but the opposite of a lot of these guys. You know, Bill Murray wasn't sure he wanted to be famous. He wasn't sure he wanted to do comedy. And Eddie Murphy, on the other hand, was like, that's exactly what I want to do, and I'm going to be famous, and I'm going to be rich. And he would go around literally telling everyone that. And I think just the pure ambition of him and just the relentlessness of him, and he was like going to make it happen.
And doing this when he'll be like, what, late teens, early 20s?
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of, that age as well.
What was his Saturday Night Live years? It was later, wasn't it? It was like 81?
So yeah, he was sort of 5 or 6 years in. You know, they'd got rid of the original cast. They brought in this new cast. He weren't particularly good. And the show probably would.
Christopher Guest,
Harry Shearer. To be honest, I didn't watch all of that stuff. I watched a lot of the early stuff, but
even the early stuff is quite hard going.
It's quite hit and miss. Yeah. It's quite hit and miss. The thing about comedy is it's hard to replicate. You know, to know what's funny or what's not.
But also, what was funny then is, especially on like a live weekly, I used to get those best of John Belushi and best of Steve Martin, best of Dan Aykroyd videos, DVDs that they did. And a lot of them would be fucking difficult to get through. really hit and miss.
Yeah, I think Steve Martin's stuff has aged the best. You know, when he would come on as host and he'd do a monologue, still really funny.
Absolutely incredible. Well, I've got a box set of all of his TV specials that he's done. So there's like him at the Troubadour was like when he did like the Arrow Through the Head act. And so then it's got like loads. He did one about commercials and just have you seen those?
It's
a really lovely box set that comes with a little booklet, and it's one of my pride possessions. It's just, it's got every single TV, and Steve Martin was, he was the real deal. He is the real deal. I mean, he did, in terms of comedy, he did everything amazingly.
Yeah. But no, Eddie. I mean, Eddie Murphy, he just kept ringing Saturday Night Live and again and again and again, and eventually they let him on. And it was just like he wasn't going to accept not being rich and famous.
Yeah.
But his story is really interesting.
But that was his way of doing it.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live, this is how you do it.
And he saved the show. I think I genuinely don't think that show would have survived.
Yeah.
Because it was about to be kind of cancelled. It was the ratings were terrible. And if you watch those episodes, it's just him who's he comes on, he's amazing. And when he's off screen, it's kind of not watchable, really.
You see, like, for someone like he is the first of the kind of, actually no, I suppose Martin is kind of a rock star comedian in terms of venues, but Eddie Murphy's stand-up persona is big and rock starish and bombastic, whereas Steve Martin, even though he's playing massive venues, is still coming out and being the idiot. Whereas Eddie Murphy's doing something completely different. And you look at that live, like something like Raw, and you compare it to the Richard Pryor live movie from the sort of end of the 70s.
Yeah.
And in that, it's a much smaller theatre. He comes on while people are still getting their drinks making their way to that. Yeah. And it's no fanfare to it at all. And it feels like completely different type of stand-up to what Eddie Murphy's doing. And Eddie Murphy's much more doing what you kind of think of as sort of quite modern stand up in Britain, where everything is now kind of big, and he comes out and says, "I'm Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a suit which everyone's going to remember." But it is. It's all like it's all appearance and.
Well, it's sort of the culmination of all of that, isn't it? It's like if Richard Pryor was kind of like a quintessential 70s comedian, and also he was making like the Richard Pryor concert movies. So you'd go to the cinema and see these concert movies. And then Steve Martin was doing the biggest arenas on the planet, and that's why he wore the white suit so people could see him from that. I don't know how like the Arrow Through the Head works when you're sat at the back of like the O2 Arena without screens, but like and then you've got Eddie Murphy, and it's kind of like this isn't the 70s, this is the 80s, it's excessive. He's talking about money and fame, and he's doing impressions of he's doing impressions of Richard Pryor, but Mr. T and Bill Cosby and like all of like the icons, and it's all about even the leather jacket and the leather trousers and everything. It's almost like a grotesque 80s what stand-up comedy is.
Yeah.
You watch it now and like it's appalling, some of the stuff he says. But it's a lot of it's really funny still.
Yeah. Well, he was obsessed with Elvis Presley, and I think he just wanted to be comedy's Elvis.
That makes so much sense. There you go.
So he would sit in his dressing room at Saturday Night Live watching Elvis concerts on TV over and over again, and like literally studying it. And so that totally comes across in the concert stuff. But yeah, the ambition and the kind of the pumped up ego. There's a quote in the book from him. At the beginning of it, it's like 1983, and he says, "When you think of the 60s, you think of the Beatles. When you think of the 80s, I want everyone to think of Eddie Murphy." And it's just like, who says that?
But they sort of do.
Yeah, and they do, and he pulled it off, which is nuts. He was so huge. He was, you know, what other comedian has a massive entourage and, you know, medallions? And unlike Steve Martin was one thing on stage and the absolute opposite off stage. Mm. Eddie Murphy came off stage and he was exactly that guy.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, with his mansion and his parties and... He had a driveway in the shape of a 9 because it was his lucky number. But it was just like, just such an oversized kind of character.
Did you get close to meeting him?
No, I mean, he doesn't really do interviews at all. I tried, obviously. But
he's a recluse, as he would say.
He's a recluse.
But that's interesting then that he's gone from that to this, right? You would think that the attention is something that he'd be really into. Also, it feels like Eddie Murphy's one of those people that he hasn't yet been reinvented, and yet it feels like everyone wants to. It feels like you always hear rumours of things Eddie Murphy's doing, you go, that'd be amazing.
Everyone's desperate for him to do something good.
That's it. I think everyone, like the hunger for that is like everyone wants to take a day.
It's weird because he made films. He still makes films, does he? Or he's made films up until quite recently, like 1,000 Words and stuff like that, which are awful. Imagine This was one, and they're awful. And it's kind of like you go, oh, that's weird. And like his last one where he was meant to have actually turned up for work was like Tower Heist. And it's kind of like, yeah, but it wasn't a great movie. And then he did like the reunion, didn't he? He didn't do the Saturday Night Live reunion for ages because of the David Spade joke on Saturday Night Live. And so I don't know, but he's obviously. But people just want him to. I'm desperate to see him do something.
He was going to host the Oscars.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. And that would have been incredible, I think.
I think, yeah, there's all these like weird missed opportunities where it feels like. And actually, what's interesting is this sort of Coming to America sequel, although I'm slightly worried about it.
Are they making it?
Yeah.
Apparently, it starts shooting in Atlanta like very soon, like
who's
next month or two.
It?
It's not Landis, is it?
It's not. They won't be Landis, I don't think. I mean, that was a really fun movie to write about. They hate, you know, they really fell out in a massive way.
What, John Landis?
To the point where Eddie Murphy got him in a chokehold. Landis had to, you know, to try and punch him in the balls to get free.
How many films did they make?
They made three, because they made another one after Coming to America.
Yeah, I was going to say, they did Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Oh, fucking
so they did Trading Places.
Why the fuck did he do Beverly Hills Cop 3?
Yeah, well, I talked to John Landis for the book, and he said he got the call from the head of Paramount saying, Eddie Murphy wants you to do Beverly Hills Cop 3, and he said, who's playing Eddie Murphy? So he couldn't believe after, like, man, it's serious for that. Because Eddie Murphy was in the press slagging off John Landis for years afterwards. Like, wasn't mincing his words, you know.
But maybe he's just aware that those films for him are like, well, that's.
Yeah, but they went from Tony Scott to John Landis.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Like, Beverly Hills Cop 2 is very much an action movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Emphasis on action with a bit of comedy. Whereas Beverly Hills Cop 3 is kind of like, the action is. I mean.
Well, there was. Yeah,
I really liked him when it first came out.
So I talked to John Landis and the writer, Stephen E. D'Souza, who did Die Hard.
Right, yeah.
And wrote Beverly Hills Cop 3, and they both said that a memo was issued by Eddie Murphy's brother during the shoot saying this is no longer a comedy, and he decided he didn't want to do a comedy, and so they had to like literally cross out punchlines of jokes and so kind of defanged the movie. I don't know how
crazy.
Great it
would
have been.
Why would you do that?
But he just decided he wanted to be like an action
guy.
But
then he did Metro, which is kind of like Beverly Hills Cop 4 in a way.
Mm.
It's a weird film. No, it's not a weird film. It's a fine film. And I don't mean that in a... It's a fine film. She was a fine lady.
I had a message this morning from former fan clubber, Hayley Campbell, who said, ask him why he upset Jackie Chan.
Does she mean why or how?
Well, she's written why.
So yeah. Why did you do it? Do you hate Jackie Chan?
No, but there was a tweet going around a couple of weeks ago saying, have you ever made a celebrity angry or something like that? And so I tweeted, I've been yelled at by two movie stars, Gary Busey and Jackie Chan.
I imagine Gary Busey's easily done.
That was Gary Busey was, I got to go to his house in Malibu. And he's got all these props from his... I'm kind of fascinated by BC. I don't know if you guys
are
sure. Interested.
Everyone is.
But so, yeah, I got to go to his house, and he's got his garage where he's got all these props from his movies. He's got posters for his movies all over the house. And he's got a box marked Gary's Childhood, but which I didn't look into. But one of the things he had was the surfboard from The Big Wednesday. So I was there for photographer for Empire, and we said, Gary, can we get a shot of you holding the surfboard? And he said something. I think it was yes. He was calling us corn dog and butt plug. Those are the names he gave us. Anyway, we dropped his surfboard on the driveway, and he screamed a primal scream of rage. Jackie Chan, I upset in Shanghai because he was in a bad mood anyway.
I can't imagine that.
No.
Yeah. I was a little bit. I mean, it was fine in the end, but I got there. He was living in a hotel prepping his next movie.
What was that?
Oh gosh, I can't remember.
Might be a clue as to why he was in such a bad mood.
Something was going on with the prep, and this was 2010 or 2010. Yeah.
Look up Jackie Chan in 2011.
It was a Chinese film. Anyway, he was in a bit of a testy mood, and then we went down and had dinner in the restaurant at the hotel, and he went quite quiet, and I thought, oh, it's all right, I'm going to do some small talk.
It wasn't just you and him having dinner.
It was the two of us and then his assistant, and somebody who'd flown out from England, like a PR.
Do you find that quite awkward?
It doesn't happen a lot, having dinner with Jackie Chan, and it was like midnight. It was super late, and so I thought I'll drop in some classic small talk, get him talking. He didn't like the small talk, so he yelled at me, and but it was cool because the next day he was super nice, and he drove me around Shanghai in his car, listening to Lionel Richie music, and.
Did you shout at him and say, not Lionel Richie?
I didn't shout at him, but he carries around, I don't know if he still does it, but at the time he carries around two toy pandas from Hamleys, and he has somebody who carries them around for him, and he let me carry them around the next day. So
that's
like
nice.
What's that about? That's like Tug Speedman at the beginning of Tropic Thunder.
So that's, yeah, I don't know if that answers Haley's question.
That's weird.
We're still not sure why you upset him.
Well, I asked him some questions about London and...
No, but this is how.
Oh, how? Mm.
Yeah, why? Why did you do
it? Oh, why did I do it? Why? I wasn't trying to. It was inadvertent.
Sounds like you had a bit of an axe to grind.
Nobody
You're
makes Jackie Chan
angry. You're listening to Foo Bar Radio. It's 152. So you asked him about London. What, have you ever been to London?
Well, he said the pandas. He'd got the pandas in Hamleys. And so I asked him a few questions about, you know, his time
there.
And
he kicks off.
Mm. Well, literally. And you don't want Jackie Chan to kick off.
Yes.
Because he'll take your fucking head off.
We're about time for the game, aren't we?
We're about time for the game, but I feel like we haven't really scratched the surface.
No, we don't need to do the game.
You interviewed John Landis.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love
him. He's
John
a talker.
Landis. Oh, yeah. I've seen him do a talk at the BFI and he was great. Got his book signed, but I didn't get his book signed by him. I just got one of the old ones that... a signed copy months later that hadn't been sold.
That story really went downhill. Started so promising.
I'm not interested in meeting them though, is the thing. You obviously didn't meet John Belushi. I'm really desperate to read this book now.
And also around this time, talking about Richard Pryor, so they would have been making films contemporaneously with...
Contemporaneously?
I know.
Wow.
I'm not sure about that. At the same time as your sort of Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor movies. Are they covered in here?
I mean, Richard Pryor pops up, but I had to kind of focus on certain people. And
right.
This was the group. This was like the collective that kind of ended up working together and falling out together. And, I really enjoyed the weird combinations of them that you get in different films. Mm-hmm. But Richard Pryor kind of makes appearances. Obviously, Brewster's Millions is in there because
of John
Candy. They didn't get on.
Do you talk about John Candy?
Oh, yeah, John Candy's a big big character in
it. That's weird because John Candy's an actor rather than a comedian, right? Or was he a comedian?
He was a comedian.
Did he do stand-up?
He did SCTV, which was like the Canadian Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night. That's where he started. So, yeah, he was a full-on comedian. Although he did JFK and wanted to do more dramatic stuff.
Yeah.
They didn't like Richard Pryor and John Candy didn't get on. It was more Richard Pryor didn't like John Candy.
But Richard Pryor didn't eventually get on with Gene Wilder either, did they? When they did Stir Crazy, Richard Pryor kept himself... Well, yeah, it was sad. Anyway.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy called Richard Pryor Yoda. That was his nickname for him.
And Richard Pryor called Eddie Murphy mean.
Right.
He didn't approve of his stand-up comedy. He says... Eddie Murphy says that he's the new Richard Pryor. He said, I'd never do the jokes that he does.
Okay.
It was like, but then they did. Did you talk about Harlem Nights?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh God, I watched that recently. And when I say recently, 2 years ago, but it's still etched in my fucking. It's not. It's the problem. Ugh. Anyway, we've got to play the game.
Okay.
Right. So this is a game called. I'm going to hand it over to Nurse.
It's called Better or Worse, and I'm going to give you a list of people, and you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my opinion.
Okay.
So starting off with Ed Sheeran. Is James McAvoy better or worse than Ed Sheeran?
Better.
He is better. Is James Corden better or worse than James McAvoy?
Clearly worse. Rattle through it,
come on. Nicole Kidman better or worse than James Corden?
Better.
Is Michael Keaton better or worse than Nicole Kidman?
Both high cards and they both
high
starred
cards.
In My Life.
Tough. That's really tough. Nicole Kidman hasn't played Batman, so I'm going to say Michael Keaton's better.
Keaton is better.
Yeah, but Nicole Kidman was in Batman Forever.
She was. Anthony Hopkins better or worse than Michael Keaton?
Better.
I would say better.
I think Anthony Hopkins is worse than Keaton.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Jack Palance better or worse than Anthony Hopkins?
Worse.
I think probably worse, yeah.
Probably worse.
Richard Pryor, better or worse than Jack Palance?
Better.
Gene Wilder, better or worse than Richard Pryor?
Worse.
I'm going to say better because I love him as Willy Wonka.
I think better.
Really?
I love Jim Wilder.
Joan Crawford, better or worse than Gene Wilder?
Worse, yeah.
Joan Crawford, better. Well,
are there definitive answers for this?
Well, it's only based on my own opinion. So that is 8.
Got 8. Well done. You got 8. You.
Great.
This is a new year. This is season 2. So you are better than our previous guest, Lloyd Griffith. So well done. He had 7. You got 8. And yeah.
It's a great honour.
Well, do you know what? Most people average about a 6 or a 7.
So it's a pretty good score.
Happy.
It also means nothing whatsoever.
It does. What are you talking about? There's a prize at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to play. Okay. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Your film
brilliant.
Is called
your
Wild
book.
And Crazy Guys. Your film. Your book is called Wild and Crazy Guys. It is absolutely incredible. Sounding. I haven't read it yet. I can't condone the content of it, but the cover is a real blast.
You'd like the yellow.
This is exactly my sort of book. Thank you very much for joining us.
That's been fun.
And we're going to play your favourite song now. Sweet Home Chicago from the Blues Brothers. I don't know why I did that.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.